You know what I mean? It's indiscriminate. It'll kill people at all population levels.
We both agree that this person is more American than most Americans we know.
Most men don't copulate to have offspring.
All humans will die, and there will be none left.
You could, for example, take a job as a rocket scientist.
Who are you to tell an immigrant how they should live their life?
All you're actually going to do is make yourself feel better about the problem.
Philosophers.
Philosophers.
So, David, what are we talking about today?
Well, you raised an interesting topic. You wanted to talk about something along the lines of, apparently, Western societies have a declining birth rate, and people are worried about this. We're going to talk today about whether that is reasonable, whether should we even be worried about this.
Yeah.
And if we are worried about it, then what should we do about it? Or what can we do about it?
When I think more broadly, this also fits into a category of we problems, humanity problems,
right?
Like species-wide problems, TM.
Right.
Because I think the important thing about, and just to give some more background, so I don't remember where I heard it. I don't even know if it's true, but it was still thought-provoking. Some source had said that it was either in the United States alone or the West, whatever
whatever that is.
However you classify that. For the first time since we've been recording this type of information, more than half of women were age 30 and childless. Like, for the first time since we've been recording this for the last 100 or so years. And the person, I don't remember who was talking about it, but it's kind of irrelevant. But then the two or three people that were discussing this went on to talk about why this was the case and all this stuff, as though it were an obvious problem. And I'm not saying that it isn't. This is not, I don't think we're going to sit here and armchair our way into trying to list off humanity's biggest problems. But the most interesting thing about it, in a nutshell, was that this is a cultural problem. And that gave me this interesting thought, like, could a species culture commit suicide by culture? Could you commit self-speciesicide because of some cultural decision? Not just like a war thing, because you could make the argument that a culture of aggressive belligerence could lead to, like, using nuclear weapons to eradicate all life on the planet, right?
But specifically about this, choosing not to have children until there's just none left.
Mm-hmm. Or something akin to that, like just decisions that would lead to a population collapse or decline. And at what point does that kind of become unrecoverable or irrecoverable? I don't know the word in that case. But so anyway, so because I also hear people talk about the opposite problem, which is overpopulating ourselves into essentially a locust swarm that consumes all the natural resources. And then
billions of people die because we can't feed them.
Yeah. Right. And then that leads to the belligerent nuking of the world or something similar to that.
Right.
So let's start with the depopulation. So keenly, this was only about the West. And I think that this also comes either right alongside or as like a preface to the whole, what is the whole, I'm not go so far to call it a conspiracy theory, but this idea that, What was it? Ethnic replacement or cultural replacement theory?
Okay.
That whole talking point. Are you familiar with?
Yes.
Like, what's that narrative in a nutshell?
Well, I mean, there's several angles people come from depending on what the rest of their political agenda is. Normally, when I encounter that kind of thing, it's in the realm of immigration.
Mm-hmm.
And so then the place where birth rates would come in would be like, well, yeah, we in the West are not having enough babies, but we're letting all these disgusting foreigners immigrate in. And so they're going to, wipe us out by numbers for reasons like that. And so there's this panic over it's xenophobia.
Right. Well, and the other one I've heard kind of akin to that, which is still xenophobic, is if it weren't for all these migrants or immigrants or whatever you call them in your country, because it kind of depends on which country you're in. In the United States, we call them immigrants, but in Europe, they're called migrants a lot. Same thing, though, really.
Right.
Jobs pay too little, A, and B, you can't find a job because there is an overabundance of workers.
Right.
So the way you would raise wages is to reduce the supply of workers.
So we have to stop letting people into the country who are going to take unskilled jobs. Yeah.
Right. And this is also assuming that the demand for services and products remains the same.
Right.
Anyway, so in a nutshell, in an effort to keep the supply of workers plentiful and not to become, to have like the China problem, you know, because China for a long time limited themselves to the two and then the one child policy because they had too many people, TM, whatever that means. But what that ended up with, you know, after a while is now you have a bunch of old people and there's not enough young people that can support that economy. And this isn't normally a problem in human societies because very rarely does the society undergo a population collapse due to lack of birth. Usually there's a famine and that kills off people at every level, especially the old, or there's war, which kills off more of the old or the young or the middle, or you know what I mean? It's mm-hmm. indiscriminate. It'll kill people at all population levels. And so you just kind of cut the population down the middle, but the ratios stay about the same. I mean, I can also understand how war could affect like the adult population the most because your combatants are most likely going to be, you know, fighting age males.
Yes.
But typically what you'd end up with is, and this also kind of comes along the back of and affects different populations differently based on what kind of social services or welfare you have. Which is, I think, is one of the biggest arguments in my mind against having a welfare system is that you have to have a more productive, if you leave it unlimited, you have to have enough people working to support the system to care for those who aren't. Right?
Right.
But anyway, so what that means for us in the West. So this is only a Western thing. So right now, in the short term, you might say that kind of doesn't matter. You know, does it really matter what the culture of the workers are? Really?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, you'll see a cultural shift in a country. Good example, let's just say the United Kingdom decides that, because it doesn't have a replacement birth rate naturally of like multi-generation back citizens, right? People who were, whose parents, grandparents, and great-grandparents were all British, right? We'll say that. Say they only immigrate people from the Slavic countries. Like, let's just limit it down to, say, Poland. So they cut off all their immigration to be just Poland now. Well, naturally, people in Poland have a higher birth rate. So if they come over to kind of do subsidize some of the work from the lack of people being born that are natively mm-hmm. British, yeah, you will eventually see more people that are ancestrally Polish than you would British. Like, the ratio will start to grow of that
minority. Right, that's just how numbers work.
That's how numbers work. And since they have more kids than you, and especially the first generation immigrants do, we notice that it takes a few generations before that kind of changes.
Mm-hmm.
And it takes a few generations before the people born into that culture kind of, instead of seeing themselves as Polish, see themselves as British, right?
Mm-hmm.
But even then, what it means to be British
Has kind of shifted.
I mean, if anything, there's a good argument to not get all of your migrants from one place, because the realistic scenario is that they don't all come from one place. Even in the United States, where a vast amount of our immigration comes from Mexico or South America, not all places in Middle and Central and South America are the same.
No.
But they have a lot more cultural similarities than they do with us.
Right.
But even then, we still, you know, people immigrate to the United States from all over the world. And so you kind of see this balancing out of what it means to be, you know, an American doesn't shift as much because you'll have some cultures that lean.
Right. It's getting, the culture is getting pulled in all different directions by whoever's mm-hmm. coming here and also the people who are here already.
Now, I will say there are certain things that will shift because if you have something that is in your culture that is fairly unique, that will eventually get diluted. Right. Like the American attitude towards, for example, property and firearm ownership is pretty unique amongst especially Europe and
yeah, especially Asia. In the West. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So naturally, the more people you get that are not from here that don't understand that or believe that the same way, and maybe there are cultural values that lead them to not come to the same outcomes, you could see that kind of change. But again, at the base root, this is all xenophobia in the way that we don't want the culture to change. We want the culture to remain the same.
Right, but why should we care?
Yeah. And that's a good question. Why should we care? And I think the argument that I've heard the most is that, well, if you think that, insert your country here, doesn't really matter which country it is. If you think that your country is great, good, better than most, whatever. Right.
Then you don't want it to change.
Yeah. Or...
because the only way to go is down. Yeah.
Yeah. Or, no, and it, not only that, but or if you wanted to continue to improve, mm-hmm. you would have something along the lines of, well, the culture that led... the people that had the culture that led to this country being as good as it is did so with this culture. And it's not as though these people are coming from the vacuum. They're coming from other places.
Yeah.
Where the argument is their cultures led to an outcome that is differently and in a lot of cases worse than what we have here.
Yeah.
So, if anything, we should culture even harder here to get better our way. Because our culture has brought us this far. You know, someone else's culture has brought them. You know, I'm using hand gestures in an audio only thing, but to a lesser degree than where we are now. So, logic dictates, if anything, we should take the things about our culture that are good and go even further with them instead of switching them to someone else's whose culture has led to different outcomes that are not as good, objectively or otherwise. And this is where it gets real murky because you're trying to attach statistics to culture, which is kind of hard to do.
And also, when you, like, okay, now let's talk about practical implementations. Okay, you want to try to control the culture such that it, you know, stays relatively close to how it's been to get your country to wherever it is now. How are you going to do that? If you're going to try to do it by restricting immigration, which is usually the thing the agenda, then like now you're either going to have to like culturally screen individuals who come in, which have fun with that. Yeah. Or you're going to just start deciding based on country or whatever, and then making the, false assumption that wherever somebody comes from determines everything about their, you know, ideas and their culture insofar as you can say an individual has culture.
Right.
And like, you know, as an anecdote, you and I know somebody who is from a place now and has been who is in a place now and is from a place that has a culture very different to the United States, but we both agree that this person is more American than most Americans we know.
Yes.
And would make a great fit to come here.
Yes.
So, you know, you would be, and indeed the reason that he's not here is because we have immigration policies that are keeping him out because of the assumption about the culture from where he comes.
Yep.
Yeah,
exactly. So the answer might be, okay, well, let your citizens sponsor people to come here. Why not? Well, you're also assuming that everybody in the destination country agrees on how the culture should be, which we don't.
Right.
That's why we have different political parties often. We disagree about how things should go. And
also, like, the ultimate, like, okay. Okay. It is a completely different episode topic to go into whether this is true or not. But the idea of like the ultimate American cultural value is you can do what you want. So who are you to tell an immigrant how they should live their life mm-hmm. if they come here?
Right.
Like maybe they're coming here because they want to do what they want and their home country doesn't let them do what they want.
Sure. Well, and I think that, but you can still, you would still have to agree on the one principle that you can do whatever you want as long as everyone else can do whatever they want.
Sure.
That's the one thing that you have to give up is that you can do whatever you want as long as you don't make anyone else do what you want them to do, which right. is kind of how America got to the point where it was originally.
Yes.
You had a bunch of people that wanted to do things their way, but also kind of liked making other people do things their way, but none of them had a solid enough majority to make any of the others do things their way. So they all compromised and said, fine, well, we're going to go to our states,
mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm, our little geographical areas and do things our way. Okay, fine. You do you over there. We're going to do us over here. Yep. The end.
So anyway, coming back to birth rates, which is the topic. Interestingly, there is actually... Okay, birth rates and specifically the topic of species-wide suicide by culture.
Right.
There is a political movement to do this on purpose.
Hmm. Was not aware of this.
Called antinatalism.
Antinatalism. Okay.
Yes. The philosophy that having offspring is immoral.
Interesting. Go on.
Because basically, okay, the elevator pitch for this philosophy is life is suffering, therefore having a child is creating suffering for somebody, and that is immoral.
Okay. Disagree, but okay.
Right. I also disagree. I think there are things worth living for, but these people do not advocate for mass suicide. They think that, you know, they're not saying life is suffering, you should kill yourself. It's just do what you want to do in life, but don't bring anyone else into the world.
Yeah. I can kind of get on board with the second point to some degree. Like, for example, a life cannot, like, children are not choosing to be born. Like, you are essentially forcing life onto, you're taking two components and forcing them together mm-hmm. to make a new life. And then, for the first several months, first 9 months, you're forcing it into some, you know, to grow to a term where now it is an independent separate unit. Regardless of how you feel about abortion, this is a fact. Like,
right.
It is not capable of existing outside of essentially the benefit, direct benefit of another person, mm-hmm. at least technologically not so right now, for 9 months-ish. And then once it comes out, it's to a different degree dependent on you. And you can, because it's dependent on you, you can kind of force it to do things. It can't be trusted with independence. Like, mm-hmm. it's not a full-fledged human.
Sure.
It's not a full-fledged agent yet. It's human, but it's not. It's in this quasi-state of, it's human, but it also doesn't have rights in the same way that an adult would. Mm-hmm. I mean, children break everything with philosophy because they kind of exist in this quasi-state. Most comfortably described as property, changed my mind, but you know, up until the time which by the way is different for each of them, when they become their own person, it's a gradual process in which they take on more and more responsibilities and can actually actualize on their rights more and more and more, mm-hmm. and then we just usually set an arbitrary date or an age where we go, okay, fine, at this point
by now you should have done this, yeah,
and then now you're on your own and you have to be fully responsible for yourself. But up until that point, they don't get to choose everything. And all the way back to the beginning, the two gametes didn't choose to combine.
Right.
Because they can't make, they're not agents.
They don't have brains.
They don't have brains. They don't have choices. But people who control them do. And so you're choosing to force these things into reality. So I kind of get where they're coming from. And I don't disagree that, yes, you're essentially coercing nature into life. you're in that way. Mm-hmm. I think for me, the biggest disagreement is that life is suffering. I think that life enables suffering, but there is not just suffering.
Right.
I think that's where my biggest disagreement comes from. Also, suffering is not universal. Like what it means to suffer, mm-hmm. it's different per person. And even if you were able to come up with an objective standard, we often don't look at suffering in a vacuum. Suffering as compared to what? Or to what benefit or to what gain? You could argue that working is suffering. Yeah, but if you're working to attain a paycheck, which leads to joy, and you weigh the joy, which anybody who continues to work would weigh that joy against the suffering of not having it mm-hmm. as better, you know. But in general, I would agree that yes, in the state of nature is suffering, like, in a, largely. I think most people forget that the default setting for humans is constantly seeking food, and it's a constant struggle away from death. Like,
right. I think that's kind of where these people are coming from. It's like, humans are never really happy, so our existence is suffering in that way, kind of.
Sure. I don't know. I also kind of disagree with the meaning of life being happiness, though. But that's a different thing. Like, we've talked about that before, where I think instead of trying to be happy, you should try to minimize suffering. That's different. And you can do a good enough job.
I guess the position of most or all antinatalists is that the positives of life do not outweigh the negatives. And so it is immoral to bring another human being into existence.
Sure. And also
to suffer more than it's worth.
Even if they're wrong, you also don't know. And more importantly, I guess you don't know for that person who's going to be whether they are going to see it that way or not.
Right.
That also leads to an odd thing, though, where you can kind of culturally fix that problem. You can raise people to see it different and to see not suffering, but to see the things done that some would call suffering as a joy, which is odd. You can condition people to different standards.
My position on antinatalism is that it is self-destructive.
Well, yeah,
obviously, because any subset of the population who does not believe in having children and actually lives out their philosophy and doesn't have children, will die in the next generation. And that will be it.
Right. But back to the original point, what happens if this is a growing movement? Like, what happens
right,
when?
Yeah. What if it actually catches on and then we all die.
Right. Well, we will all die anyway, but the species,
yes.
You know.
All humans will die, and there will be none left. Yeah.
Right.
First of all, that's going to happen anyway. It's a matter of when, not if.
Mm-hmm.
But also, who are you to take command of the species and say, we need to behave this way or else we'll die? Well, maybe I don't care.
Yeah. That's true.
Maybe I know I'm going to die anyway, and maybe I want to live my life the way that I want to, and you'll get over it or not.
Yeah. I think that's the biggest problem, is that where do you place individualism versus the collective? In this case, the collective being the species.
Literally all of us, yeah.
Yeah. And I think the hubris associated, you're kind of hinting at, is absolutely correct. Who are you to say what is best for the species?
Cause, right.
And it also, you kind of have to be somewhat of a human exceptionalist to think that we should be any different. Because mm-hmm. 99.9% of all known species have gone extinct.
Well,
what makes you think that we would be any different? And that doesn't even have to come in the form of all of us dying out eventually, necessarily. A good example is Neanderthals, which are another type of human. They died out, but not really, but kinda.
Yeah.
You know, they had offspring that were not enough Neanderthal to be called Neanderthals anymore. They're humans now, like Homo sapiens sapiens humans.
Yes.
Like, they eventually kind of merged into us. And who's to say that we won't undergo a similar process at some point?
Like, at what point do we genetically change to no longer be identifiable as human anymore? You know, that could happen, realistically.
Right. Well, yeah, if we survive long enough, it will happen, yeah.
Yeah. And there will be these, you know, neo-human forms, genetically speaking, that are different than us, that might be better than us. Now, don't get me wrong. I think that we are kind of removing the pressures to allow that to happen, you know? We are, in a lot of ways, kind of trying to disconnect ourselves from natural selection, but not really. We just see it as different.
It's right. Yeah. But selection is still happening.
Yeah, it's just happening differently. Because we feel as though we're doing things by choice. Like, someone made, like the argument would be made is that, well, what about things that exist genetically in humans that would have caused us to die out before? Like, a good example is diabetes, right?
Mm-hmm.
It, I don't know how far back diabetes goes, genetically speaking, but if it became the case that we never did anything to essentially allow those who would develop diabetes type 1, type 1's the one you get when you're a child, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. So, in what should happen, TM, if we didn't manually affect things, is that anybody born with type 1 diabetes would most likely die before they were able to reproduce.
Mm-hmm.
So, eventually, there would be no more type 1 diabetes. Or it would become increasingly rare. It would not grow because... But now we have medicine that allows those people to... We can treat it and allow those people to continue to live. But that disease also lives. And they pass it on.
Right.
There's a lot of diseases kind of like this. You can make the argument that cancer is this. Cancer is one of those things that probably has existed in humans forever, but because no one lived long enough for it to usually manifest, it wasn't a problem.
Right, you got killed by something else before you got cancer. Yeah.
Right.
Before you would have developed it. Yeah.
Exactly. And it's also kind of interesting because anything like longevity is something that isn't necessarily selected for.
Because no.
It kind of doesn't matter.
All you have to do is... Yeah, you need to live long enough. At the bare minimum, you need to live long enough to have children. And then you do substantially better if you can live long enough to have grandchildren.
Right.
And you don't necessarily have to live long enough to have grandchildren, but you need to raise your children to be able to have grandchildren.
Exactly. And so that's really all that's being... All the things that are aid in that are what are being selected for. You might be able to even make the argument, though, that us waiting to have kids till later is something that could also place a new natural selective pressure. For example, if, say, tomorrow all humans stopped having kids before the age of 30, which is would be
yeah,
very
I've thought,
different.
I've thought about this before, like, What if, like, the entire world put a limit and said... Now, with women, this gets complicated. You can't start putting arbitrary age limits on that for very long or very late because then other biological things take effect to make it impossible. But if you said, like, okay, only men over 45 can have children now,
mm-hmm.
and then just, like, steadily increase that number, yeah, how long would it take before everyone's living to, like, 150 or 200?
Right. Well, and even with women, you might be able to do that because not all women go through menopause at the same time.
True.
Some go through it a lot earlier than others. But if you selected for those that it occurred later on, it would keep getting later and later.
Should, anyway.
Right.
Because the genes that stave that off would eventually become the dominant genes. Yeah. So that would be, you know, you can make the argument that this is something that may not, but you're kind of, it's kind of a race condition too, because you will end up seeing fewer people being born in the meantime until
yes.
this becomes normal. And then the population should reach a new equilibrium.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's the thing that people are mostly afraid of. I don't think that humans, like, it would take something pretty drastic for us to culture ourselves into non-existence, right?
Yeah, you're fighting against biology.
Mm-hmm. And biology has been fighting this fight a lot longer than our cultures have.
Right.
Yeah. And I think that you could even make the argument that... I think that you could make the argument that our biology already does fight against this in a lot of ways. I mean, there are some very ugly things that occur,
mm-hmm.
but...
women waiting to have children are not the thing. Women wanting to have children is not what drives the population. It's typically men wanting to, you know,
right,
copulate, we'll say. That's what makes babies. It's not women letting men have sex with them necessarily. It's the men wanting that is what's driven the human population.
Right.
Like I said, some ugly things can occur, but that also is what drives men to be hyper-competitive in that space. I think a more interesting argument to look at is not women waiting to have children until they're older, but like men seeking alternatives to copulation. Like, could we technologically replace the drive to reproduce with technology, if you catch my drift on that one?
Yes.
Yeah, because that's something that people are trying to do.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they are creating more and more realistic alternatives, you know, beyond women, we'll say, or
right.
whatever the, you know, lab-grown alternative to meat is, whatever, they like Beyond Meat, and what's the other one?
Impossible.
Yeah. So what if we had the impossible sex or the beyond sex created that doesn't yield offspring?
Right.
Right. Because I would even make the argument that most men don't copulate to have offspring. That's not something like we have to.
That is a side effect. Yeah.
As a side effect of us wanting to do that. And more importantly, and interestingly, I think, there had to be built-in biological things to stop us from dealing with the consequences of wanting to copulate. Because, mm-hmm. And you see this in other creatures too. Good examples are, well, most mammals kind of be this way. Once a male impregnates a female, there's a lot of species where the male will attempt to kill their own offspring so that they can copulate again, because they're not biologically driven to raise offspring as much as they are to begin that process, right? As a person who has owned many cats and dogs in his lifetime, that is a thing that happens in cats, for sure. Not so much in dogs, but in cats, it absolutely is a thing. Male cats will attempt to kill even their own offspring, because when a female has offspring, it delays them going into heat again.
Mm-hmm.
And only when they're in heat do they want to copulate. So it's like, if I only want to solve for X here, I can get rid of all the other things and return to that state, you know. But what happens, I think for humans, though, us coming up with that alternative, it's probably a bigger threat to our species than women waiting to have kids later. Especially because in human beings, women are choosy. They want to select for, you know, whatever they deem whatever to be a more acceptable male. Yeah. Whatever it is.
But they are selecting.
But yes. They are doing the selecting.
Most of the time.
So what that does is set some goal that has to be achieved by males in order to get what they want. But what if you could lower that bar with an alternative that's just as good? Could that exist, right?
Mm-hmm.
And the thing is, it doesn't have to be better. It just has to be as good. Right?
Right.
Because if it's about the same, why would you seek to... And I understand that there are other things. Like, we humans do not pair up just to have offspring. That's not a reason, but it's usually a part of it. But what if you could replace that part of it with something else?
Mm-hmm.
Like, imagine there's somebody that you really... Because you hear this story happen all the time, right? When people are trying to, especially in cultures in which monogamy is kind of a thing, like marriage, we'll say. I'll just substitute monogamy with marriage here. Marriage gives a lot of benefit in the traditional sense. Raising children is easier when both people that invested in having the children stick around to raise them, right?
Yes.
Typically better. Also, in that time, you typically get to know that other person better, and you both kind of change over time to be more suitable together.
Mm-hmm.
So it kind of works out. But in doing so, it's a lot... If you think about that when going into the process of finding a partner, it's kind of hard to find a partner that you want to do step one with, which is the process which yields having offspring, to do step two with raising those offspring, and then the step three with, which is existing as an old person together and dying together eventually. Like, finding someone that, it's easier to find somebody that checks any one of those three boxes,
mm-hmm.
you know. For example, I think that, you know, there are a lot of men that would rather just exist with other men, like friendships exist outside of this process.
Yes.
But there are a lot of people that are a lot closer when it comes to like companionship in the, I want to spend time with, speak with, you know, that kind of thing. A lot of people are right. closer to their friends than they are their spouse in that way.
Mm-hmm.
There are a lot of people that would much prefer to copulate with people other than their spouse.
Yep.
But they wouldn't want to raise children with those people.
Mm-hmm.
And then I think it's arguable, but I would say that there's the case that if you, there would be people out there that would be great parents, like great mothers if you're a male, or a great father if you're a woman, that you don't just want to copulate with, that you also don't want to grow up with, but you want their resources and their attention to better your offspring. I mean, we even have a name for people that do this as a profession. Nannies, caretakers, what's the other one? Au pairs, things like that. Like, we have entire professions where people get good at doing just this part. And in a lot of societies where there is affluence, you kind of see this happen. People separate these roles out amongst different people mm-hmm. who specialize in each one. So, and in that case, having a spouse mainly becomes a person with which you marry to get assets or to control your own assets in some other kind of social hierarchical structure. I'm thinking like Renaissance Europe, where getting married was more about growing your family's asset pool and connect in political and diplomatic connection than it was raising kids, than it was anything else, right? Because most people would still have kids with other people, or most men would anyway. They were just bastard children. But even the children you had with your spouse, you and your spouse wouldn't be the ones raising them most of the time. You had nannies and things like that for that. And then as for like people you spent the most time with and wanted to confide in, you had your friends and stuff like that.
Mm-hmm.
So there does seem to be alternatives to the traditional everyman marriage that we kind of seen become popular in places like the West, where this is a thing, right?
Yeah.
I think that replacing any of those with a technological alternative that doesn't yield the further down the stream connections could also threaten the human population.
Mm-hmm.
You know, imagine instead of getting married for assets, because we don't really do that anymore. The social strata really isn't that way. And in fact, that's one of the biggest complaints people have about getting married. You know, like the argument about prenuptial agreements, you know, that's a big thing going on in our culture right now.
Mm-hmm.
Should they be a thing normal or not? You know, and there's different schools of thought about that. I don't know. I just think that the tendency to blame women waiting until they get older, which I'm not saying that these people are blaming women. They mainly blame the culture that would drive women to do these other things. Right.
But they're kind of the same. Like, that's the thing. It's like, yeah. The people who would write about something like this and, you know, frame this in a, you know, semi-panicked way, or framing it at all in a sense of this is a problem and it needs to be solved somehow, would never point at an individual woman and say this is your fault for choosing not to have kids. And yet they are pointing at all of those women and saying this is your fault for not having kids.
Right. It's your fault. Partially because you listen to the culture, and it's also the fault of anybody who promulgates this stuff, mm-hmm. you know, this culture. And so, which also tends to be the same people who make that decision, because most people will espouse their culture because they chose it. It's a good idea, because we don't typically admittedly choose things that are bad for us. We think they're good ideas. That's why we choose them. And then if they're good ideas, we want to spread them so that other people spread them too, you know? So, yeah, I don't know. It's tough. I think, because looking at it on the one hand, I understand it. Like, I grew up in a certain way. Most people do, under a different culture than the one they kind of grow into.
Mm-hmm.
But you inherit a lot of those things. For example, I grew up a religious, devout Christian. I am not anymore. But a lot of my values, I kind of hang on to,
mm-hmm.
you know. I generally think that things... There is some wisdom in religion, in some religions, because if there wasn't, those religions would die out, right? Like, there has to be... Right.
There are nuggets of truth, yeah.
Yeah, and if you retain the nuggets of truth, that's great. And also, there are, like, formulae for how you can live your life that... And they're different, but the ones that have survived to now have survived because the people who lived their lives in those ways tended to probably... be better off. Like, I happen to think that if you want to be monogamous, have a traditional marriage and things like that, you can do all of those things as long as you find someone else. And if you both play by the same playbook, you can have a pretty happy life.
Mm-hmm.
It's not so much the playbook you choose. It's just being, pick one and stick
right,
with it.
Agreeing. Yeah.
Yeah. And then agree with the other people or person that's playing by the same playbook and you'll be fine. It's the cooperation that makes these things work. But anyway, that's a tangent. So yeah, I think when it comes back to the whole population thing is A, the premise that you should decide whether or not how the society should survive is flawed from the get-go. Who are you to say? Now, in general, I think most people would agree that humanity, the human species continuing to propagate, is probably a good thing. Except for some. But most people would say it's generally good because we also kind of see humanity as an extension of ourselves. We want to continue to exist. Ergo, we want humanity to continue to exist.
Mm-hmm.
Even though we would be long dead before the species died out, you know, it's very unlikely you will be the last human, you know?
Right.
But still, I in general think it's a good idea. But at the same time, it kind of doesn't matter whether we want to or not. Ultimately, we won't, eventually.
Right.
Like you said, it's a matter of when, not if. So, and I think this falls neatly into one of those buckets of problems so big that all you're going to do is give yourself anxiety and stress over concerning yourself with it.
Probably, why bother?
Why bother? Like, what are you going to do that's going to benefit your individual life by worrying about this problem? Realistically, like what are you, the individual, going to do to change this problem or to affect it? Probably not much. And that tends to be how it goes.
The only thing you could do without violating other people's rights is to just have more children and talk about it, I guess. But
sure, there's nothing wrong with trying to convince other people to do something, and there's nothing wrong with living it yourself. But you probably won't be satisfied because you will not. Even if you went out and had the most kids and convinced a lot of people to change it, all you're actually going to do is make yourself feel better about the problem, which, to be fair, you probably are only concerned about this problem because it's your rationalization of the problem. Like, can you as an individual really comprehend your impact on all humanity?
No.
But you can rationalize a way to do it, and that rationalization is almost guaranteed incorrect.
Mm.
So all you're going to be doing is trying to satisfy your own rationalization of it anyway. So I don't know. I think it's like when people try to solve the problem of the meaning of life. It's like, okay, do you even understand what it is to be a living thing?
Right.
And in the context of all living things? No, you don't. Because you only have a single perspective, and you can never escape that single perspective anyway. You can try, but you'll fail because you cannot fully understand anything else, much less anyone else.
Right.
Like, you cannot understand a simple life form. Like, you cannot fully comprehend and understand what it means to be a squirrel. Another living thing. You can understand and have rationalized that life, but you'll never fully understand it.
You won't know.
Yeah. You won't know. And you know what? That's okay. You don't need to know. You were not, like, your genetic structure was not built so that you would know what it's like to be a squirrel. It's fine.
Right. It's not relevant to your life.
It's not, it's literally not relevant. So don't worry so much about it. Focus more on the things you can control and in your own life. And that's all anyone can really do. I think anybody who focuses on these big problems, I think it's poor mental hygiene and hubris that makes you even begin to think you can address these problems. And don't be wrong, there's nothing, I don't think there's anything wrong with entertaining it. We're entertaining these kinds of things right now.
Sure.
But at the end of the day, I'm going to go to bed and it's not going to matter.
Right. Yeah. I'm not going to care about this after we walk out of this room today. Yeah.
No. But it's good for the conversation we're having right now. And I'm not regretting doing so.
Sure.
But there's a big difference in having the conversation about it, entertaining it, and then putting it back in the toy box when you're done.
Right.
and making it your life's mission to do something about it that you'll never succeed. All you'll ever do is succeed in fooling yourself into thinking you made a difference, which is all the same to you because it's all a rationalization anyway. Mm-hmm. You know, I don't mean this to be too harsh and shoot down your dreams or whatever, but like, I don't know. If anything, I think that's one of the biggest viral memes that has kind of infiltrated humanity is this idea that you are significant and matter in the grand scheme. You know? And I'm not saying that you can't feel like you do, because of course you feel like you do. Everyone sees themselves as the main character in their own story, which you are, but you're also the only one watching that story.
Mm-hmm.
And that's fine. Be happy that you're living out your best. I think the only thing we complain about is when it becomes where you now need to direct the, you know, supporting actors and the rest of the cast in your story. You know, you're the main character of your story. You're not the director of your story in that way. Right. You know, reality's the director, but you're the main actor, I guess. I don't know if you want to extend that analogy, but I don't know. So yeah, to the original premise, should it be something you worry about?
No.
No. Does it matter? Not really.
Not really, no.
Yeah. Pretty simple at the end of the day. And could a species culture itself into non-existence or extinction? Yeah, absolutely.
Maybe, yeah.
I think it absolutely could. Because what is a culture if not a physical manifestation of your environment plus your genetics, you know, or the species itself? It's just it's what we see as being a much more complicated expression, but it's really all it is. You know, it's in a lot of ways no different than, in my mind, you know, how some species adapt to have these beautiful, like peacocks did not, they evolved these pretty plumes for mating reasons, you know?
Mm-hmm.
That's not culture, but you might be able to describe the process by which they use those plumes to try to attract a mate as culture. It's a very archaic and basic form, but all ours is a more abstracted version of that. You know, it's just memes.
Right.
So, yeah, I think you absolutely could. It's not that much different than, and that culture could, like, I think another good example is a culture that exists in, that clashes with the environment to cause, you know, an extinction. You know, a good example would be that if we were to take this on a micro scale, where there is a culture that prioritizes living next to volcanoes for some reason, and you're a relatively small population that, oh, everybody needs to live on the mountain of the volcano, eventually that will lead to an extinction event because it will erupt
right.
and kill everybody. And it was the culture that determined them doing that.
That's another type of suicide by culture, yeah.
Yeah. For that specific group, you know. But we're just scaling the problem up to humanity at large. Well, we're still in a sandbox. And the example I gave before, it's probably some island or maybe some geographic place. Well, the Earth is a geographic place. Well, I don't know if it's geographic at that point.
It's all of the geography, but yes.
All of the geography, but that's a sandbox within the solar system. All the humans happen to be located right now on or slightly around Earth.
Right.
You know, I think the most interesting thing that people are trying to do is escape Earth to spread people out so that you reduce the likelihood of an extinction level event like that. That's interesting.
Right. Sending some people off the volcano. Yes.
Yeah. And to some degree, I think they're right. Technically.
Well, yes. It is far more likely that an extinction event wipes out all humanity on Earth than like an extinction event wipes out anyone in the solar system.
Right.
If people get outside of Earth.
Now, like, fast forward about...
It is very likely that, like, a large asteroid will hit the Earth and have another large extinction event like we've heard about in the past. It is less likely for a gamma ray burst to destroy the entire solar system.
Right. So, yeah. Just like moving off the volcano, like you said before, this is the same thing. You're just spreading out to avoid a single event causing total annihilation. But eventually there will be an event that wipes out essentially the entire known universe. Eventually.
I don't know if it'll be a single event, but...
Combination of events, at least.
Right.
But yeah, eventually all life will cease. You can't escape that, but you're just kicking the can down the road. So, for those who are advocating we kick the can, okay.
Do it then.
Go for it. Yeah. Dedicate your life to that, knowing that you will never see it.
Right. You will not. Yeah, you will die first. But it is cool.
It is cool. And you can also do things that contribute to those things that will still benefit your life.
Sure. You know?
Like, you could, for example, take a job as a rocket scientist for which you will be rewarded very handsomely in your life for doing that work.
Or you might just find intrinsic joy in doing that kind of thing. Like,
sure.
As a person who likes solving problems, I can appreciate that.
Yeah. Well, I think most importantly, we just don't get in the way of the people who would do that anyway.
Right.
I think that's the bigger risk is obviously people want to do it because we did it. We left Earth before. We didn't go very far, but we still left at baby steps, you know. The most important thing is just to not stop, you know, back to our little volcano island analogy. You may not need to be the person building the raft to try to go find another island. But just don't stop other people from building the rafts to go to the other island. It's that simple. Like, really, the best thing you can do in a lot of cases is just don't stop others from trying to get off the island. Because realistically, none of us can cause the volcano to go off, if you will.
Yeah.
You know? So don't try to eradicate the people and those of you with buttons that control fast nuclear arsenals. You know, how about we don't?
At you. Yeah.
How about you not do that? And in the meantime, get out of the way of other people who are trying to make it so that even if you do decide to push that button someday, they won't be affected.
Right.
I think it's that simple. Like step one, step two. I don't know if that's enough steps to have a philosophy about life, but it pretty well fits into mine. So that I would be okay with propagating that idea.
Sure.
So. I guess as an aside, let's talk about the original example before of people not birthing enough people. Is that going to be a problem for some places? Yes. It has already been a problem more than once. China is a really good example of where the state did this, but it has also been a problem throughout history in places that were devastated by both natural disasters and wars and whatnot. But keep in mind that your nations or your civilizations are the volcanoes in this case, to continue the analogy.
Mm-hmm.
It's not all of humanity. And it's going to be a very long time, if ever, we get to the point where all humanity is facing this problem. Because overall, there are more places where people are being born more than necessary to replace their populations every day than there are places where this is not the case. You know? And any attempt to say that
also, I actually don't know if normally when I think of a cultural shift, which is leading people, is leading like populations to have fewer children, it's always in a more advanced civilization mm-hmm. with lots of technology. I'm having a hard time believing actually that that could fully wipe out a civilization. Because an advanced civilization requires a well-maintained supply chain. And these cultures are entirely dependent on the status quo of technology.
Right.
Like if we look at like Japan, mm-hmm. You know, they have a culture of, they have several memes in their culture which are contributing to a declining birth rate. You know, there's the drive for men to work constantly. And then also the same things that we have here in the West of at home entertainment, not spending as much time out meeting people, that kind of thing.
Right.
Well, if the supply chain collapses because a whole bunch of people, because people are getting old and they can't work anymore, you know, then yes, your advanced, the advancedness of your society will collapse. But the people who are left will have nothing better to do than to go outside and meet people and do human things again.
Right. Well, I think what eventually would happen in that scenario, so let's take the, let's do Japan. It's an island nation. It works out for good examples, yes. Right? Say Japan implements immigration policies that stops enough people from coming in. What you, I think you'll end up seeing eventually is one of two things. If the demand continues to increase for people to work to keep the supply chain going, well, people will be making more money than ever, and the people who make more money may not necessarily need to have both people working. And your cultural drivers, I think, ultimately give way to the economic drivers. Good example. How many people do you know that are the most voracious environmentalist that still buy plastic?
Mm-hmm.
I'm just saying, like, looking at you, everybody who complains about the gigantic plastic garbage pile in the ocean, sipping from your plastic water bottle
mm-hmm.
or your plastic straw in your house that has a bunch of plastic goods in it. You know what I mean? Like, because those things are cheap. So yeah, I think eventually, if, you know, if it gets to that point, yeah, why would you, it, you know, it might be better for both of you to have jobs, but eventually you'll have enough money that it won't matter what you would spend it on.
Mm-hmm.
And it no longer, you know, the more money you have or the more affluent you become, the less necessary that feels to most people. And if it becomes less and less of a priority to survive or to thrive, like less of a drive, eventually, even if it's been placed a lot lower on the totem pole, having children will become a thing that you do.
Yeah.
Now, I think the dangerous part of this is not that people won't do it. It's that they won't do it fast enough, and that there will be things like price fixing that come into effect, because these elderly folks that are not working still need things.
Mm-hmm.
And that money has to come from somewhere. And what ends up happening, I think you can easily fall into the trap of governments taxing the crap out of people who now have these super high paying jobs, but their quality of life doesn't increase. But even then, that's not forever. That's temporary. That's until those old people die. And now you have a surplus of, you know, the population mm-hmm. will shift to its new equilibrium. And yeah. with that, a lot of supply chain things that existed before are no longer necessary, because you don't need as dense of a supply chain to support a smaller population. So there's multiple ways that the equilibrium can be reached. I just think that in general, when governments begin getting involved, they happen to pick a lot of the most inefficient ways to get there in the name of reducing suffering or in the name of providing entitlements. Governments that do not provide universal healthcare, for example, do not deal with this as much as governments that do. you know, the more your government offers an offset to the reality of your situation and also promotes policies that prevent that, or that would prevent, you know, populations naturally filling demand, that's when you see the worst problems come about. Like China is, I think, a really good example of this, because they do offer a lot of these benefits and you end up seeing them making really hard choices. Like, I don't know, man, it gets to the point where it's like, how do I provide adequate healthcare that I'm promising to people? Well, I can't, there are too many. So if you fix all the other variables, I guess people need to start dying so that I can meet this demand for others. And it kind of gets dark pretty quick. I mean, we see that happen in places like North Korea where, you know, it's absolutely a thing where you have too many people sometimes, or you got these old people that can't work no more. Well, maybe we send Granny to the retirement home or the retirement farm where Granny doesn't consume resources anymore magically because she's dead. Like,
right.
I don't know. It gets dark pretty quick. So I don't know. It do be interesting, I suppose. But in general, don't worry about it. And don't stop other people from trying to get off the island or make the island a better place. Pretty simple, I think.
Right.
Philosophers.
Philosophers. If you like the music in this episode, please check out Jippy on Bandcamp at jippy.bandcamp.com.
Philosophers is supported by viewers like you.
If there's a topic you'd like us to discuss,
or a topic you'd like to see revisited in the future,
please let us know by contacting us using the methods in the description,
or in the comments below. Thank you for listening.